Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 15th for November 26, 2012. My name is Stuart Clark.
I'm Jameson Roberts.
I'm Mike Batista.
Well, gentlemen, can you believe it? It's less than 1 month until Christmas. Panic will start to ensue, I'm sure.
No.
It's already started.
It's already started.
Cyber Monday.
I got to ask either of you. Are either of you very, very much last minute, like we go out on the 24th and shop? Mike?
I am very much. Yeah, like 23rd, 24th is when I get most of it done. And sometimes that involves going to Amazon and printing off a gift certificate.
Oh, that's lame.
Ooh. I'm a terrible person.
You are? Jameson?
Last week. Last week. I try to save it until then. Although this year I'm not going to be doing much shopping, so...
There you go. Yeah, well, from working, I worked in a bookstore many years ago, and I always remember I worked in a downtown bookstore for 2 years, and the same year we would close at 5, and at 4:57, the same guy would come in every year, and he obviously had 2 kids and a wife, and would just grab, you know, and I'm thinking, God, how pathetic. You know, so that kind of got me out of the whole last-minute thing, so...
But at least he was buying books.
Yeah, but yes, because we were the only store that was open.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's pretty sad when you do that, and especially as you're saying with Amazon, with the technology today, there's really, really no excuse. So, yeah.
You mean procrastination's not a decent excuse?
Not anymore.
No.
Not anymore. And you, because you're getting married in January, you will learn that very, very quickly.
Oh, I know.
Exactly. So, yep. So please feel free to join the chat room. We've got a couple people in the chat room already. Not a hugely busy week compared to the last couple of product announcements and stuff like that. So we've got a whole mishmash of stories here. And if anyone in the chat room wants to talk about anything else, please feel free. Just a reminder as well, don't forget to rate our show on iTunes or Castroller. It really does help. We want to try and get that subscriber count up. Okay, we'll begin. So the first topic is one Mr. Roberts added, and this is interesting. CPUs to potentially be no longer available separate from motherboards. I don't even know if that's good English.
I copied and pasted the link pretty quick.
Okay, that's all right. So go ahead and fill us in on this.
So basically, with the trend of tech these days, Intel's looking at the prospect for CPUs no longer being interchangeable. So for the DIYers and the gamers in the room, and even the Hackintoshers, it's a very scary proposition. Because if you can't do that, then you're locked into a single processor and a single motherboard. And when you want to upgrade one, or, you know, say the next year comes out and there's 4 gigahertz boost for, you know, for lack of something better, lack of something else, you can't just plop in the old, you know, the old CPU in a new motherboard or the new, you know, it limits what we can do with the tech. But from this flip side, I also see where Intel's going with it, because without this type of development, it's going to get harder and harder for them to get the bandwidth and the interoperability with all the motherboards that, you know, that are out there. It's a catch-22.
Yeah, I think there are fewer and fewer people who would actually swap out a motherboard these days. I mean, especially because we have iPads, we have iPhones, where you don't even think of upgrading them in that way.
Probably even laptops.
And yeah, I was going to say, like my MacBook Pro here with Retina display, you can't upgrade anything on it.
Was that like a blatant, you know?
No, I'm not showing off.
Right? I didn't realize you'd gotten one. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but it's a beautiful machine, but I can't do anything with it. If I want to upgrade it, I have to get a new one. That seems to be the norm these days, which is probably a sad thing, but also we get nice thin devices.
Well, I'm also wondering if it's for cost reasons as well. And as you were saying, not many people now, you know, cook their own processors or make their own machines. Mm-hmm. And as you say, more and more with the integrated. But yeah, I can see a few of the Hackintosh people crying in their soup.
The other thing I can see is a lot of people who like to do a lot of overclocking are going to scream bloody murder, because if you cook your processor and you cook it good, you're out a significant chunk of change, not only for the processor, but potentially for the motherboard as well. A friend of mine posted this on Facebook, and we had a rather good discussion with a couple other people about the possibility of daughter boards and going back to the old P1 and P1, P2s and things like that for the processors. And I don't see that being a viable solution. The one thing that I posted on that was that, yeah, it'd be all fine and dandy to have a CPU on there, but you're still fighting with the big issue of bandwidth more and more with PCIe 3, SATA 3, USB 3, Thunderbolt. You're looking at huge amounts of data transfer capabilities, and, you know, with the CPU bouncing it back and forth to the RAM, to the hard drive, all across the board, if you've got it deeply integrated in the motherboard, you can do a lot more with the silicon.
And I think that's one thing that's going to be important. You know, we're looking at how much bandwidth, how much data we're driving across things. Like, you know, you talk about, Mike, your Retina display. You know, I've heard reports where people are saying, you know, we're not going to see a 30-inch studio Retina display anytime soon just because of the amount of bandwidth it would take to run it, to drive that. So more and more, I think you're going to be seeing, an interesting thing. And, you know, as Jamie says here, overclockers sometimes, sometimes they can take a little bit to the limit. I like this. Why spend $200 on extra cooling just so you can get an extra 25% clock speed? Why not just buy a faster CPU?
Well, yeah, there is the whole, you know, compensation issue, but...
they're compensating for something.
Yeah, I know. But the thing for me, especially right now, because with being a Hackintosher, is there's so few motherboards and not so much CPUs, but motherboards that are interchangeable in the way that the BIOS and the EFI system works, that it's going to be interesting. Although we've also heard rumors with Apple potentially shifting away from Intel to their own in-house chips. So that's going to be a whole huge other thing in the future.
And as I said, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But, you know, we've already seen, like, more and more as more people buy laptops and stuff like that. You know, you're getting where you're getting to the point where you can't change, you know, you can change less and less parts. I know at the place I worked at before, we had issues for a while with a particular brand of laptop with some USB controllers. And they wouldn't just swap out the USB controller, they'd swap out the whole board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, I think it's, I'm not surprised to see it. I think as a natural hacker myself, it's a shame, but I, you know, there's always ways around it. There'll always be products on separate things available for the hobbyist, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and it just won't be as mainstream. So,
And the one thing I think it's going to be important for driving tech, because I don't think that we can go too much further, because we're already starting to push the nanometer limits and things like that. And, you know, you've got Intel with their 3D-dimensional transistors just to try and trim a little bit more performance out of the chip that's there. And when you're looking at even the pin sets, you've got the larger end of things, the 2011 chipset, that's a lot of pins.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have to cater to those pins and they're built into the motherboard, you could do a lot more with it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we'll just have to kind of keep an eye ahead on what happens. So, okay, moving on. We got a couple of Facebook stories. First one is, Facebook's everyone's darling. Everyone loves to rat on them and hate them and all that. And I don't blame them because, frankly, some of their privacy stuff really sucks. Anyway, this the latest thing is they've got a bunch of stuff they're thinking about. You know, a couple of things I read, I have a Globe and Mail story we linked to here. One of the main things is they want to eliminate a setting for users to control who can contact them in their private email service. So basically it's new filters for managing incoming messages. And from the article, asked whether a change could leave Facebook users exposed to a flood of unwanted spam-like message, the spokesman said the company carefully monitors user interaction and feedback to find ways to enhance the user experience, end quote. I swear there's got to be a book somewhere with all these marketing speak things. I can see why people are going to be upset, but you know what? Guess what? At the same time, Facebook, it's not like you're paying for it.
And it's on the internet.
Comments.
Yeah, I mean, you can't expect that much privacy when you're putting stuff on the internet, you know, on a social media site.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the whole point is that you're putting it out there for people to see. And they're going to use that information.
You're putting it for people to consume, not for super copyrighted private stuff.
Right.
If you're expecting to use Facebook or Twitter or any of those other services for actual private communication, you're joking yourself.
True. And in a way, privacy is dead.
Well,
overall, I mean, even email, you could say that if you want to give someone a private message, send them an email.
It's public as a postcard.
Yeah, Gmail is Google's still going to be monitoring your Gmail and using that for their own purposes. So, I mean, I'm okay with privacy being dead. I know a lot of people won't be.
Yeah, well.
You know, and this is it exactly. And, you know, the comment about, you know, how to set up your own personal email and that, I guess it's, you know, it's no different. People are going to fear, like, oh, am I going to get stalked or something? But really, finding someone's email is pretty easy to do anyway, someone's general email. You know, if you know someone's Facebook thing, it might make it a little bit easier to find. But you know,
you can block email addresses.
Well, and this is what I'm hoping Facebook will at least have some mechanisms in place. And that's what the spokesman didn't really speak to that. Mm-hmm. But hopefully, we'll see something like that. But you know, again, it's another case of you know, how do we, you know, how does a big company monetize this and make the experience better, and also for its advertisers? Because you know, Facebook's in the business; they're a public company, and they're in the business to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's something we have to remember. Any other comments on that one?
I mean, the main thing is that it is free. I mean, we saw with app.net. I know we talked about that a few weeks ago, probably a few months ago now.
Yes,
where that's what happens when you want people to pay for something. Is that no one's going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, either you have a place where you have all your friends, you can interact with them in ways, you know, designated by Facebook, or you don't. And, you know, the price of doing that is a loss of privacy.
Exactly. Speaking of app.net, because I know you actually subscribe to it.
I do, yeah.
What's the latest there?
I'd tell you if I'd logged on in the last few months.
So there we go. That says it all right
there. That says it all, yeah.
Yeah, so interesting. Yeah, I think it's a case of you've got an interesting idea, but yeah, it's mm-hmm. like any social networking platform. Like people were on MySpace, then they went to Facebook, and it's mm-hmm. getting the critical mass over.
Yep.
Well, and I think about the privacy thing, you just have to take it with a grain of salt. I mean, I know a lot of people who have tweaked their privacy settings and things like that, but ultimately it's all online, so it's going to be there. And when it comes to email addresses, if you don't like the emails you're getting from, either get a new email address, because that's darn easy these days,
mm-hmm.
or just block the people, you know, mark these emails as spam. Your email providers will generally get a, you know, sort of, either algorithmically, automatically do this and just continue to block it, or, and you know, there's tons of other options. But the number of it's interesting because I've had people complain about, oh well, you know, all my stuff is online. But you already, when you sign up for services and things like that, you're already inputting all of your content, yep. all of your location addresses. So quite frankly, you have no one to blame but yourself.
Yep. Just as an aside, I think it's funny. Someone in California ordered a new iPhone and AT&T service, and they happened to have my name. And for whatever reason, when they signed up, they used my Gmail address.
Oh.
So I keep getting notifications like, congratulations, your phone is activated. You can't reply to that. And it says, oh, go to your account setting. And of course, I can't go to that because it's a separate password. So yeah, I keep finding about all these great, great deals in the States through AT&T and the amount of spam that comes through. And I tell you, every time I dutifully go to Gmail. And I tell it to market as spam and that. And it hasn't worked yet, so.
I'm going
to
give it some time.
We'll have to see what happens, yeah.
So. Yeah.
Exactly. And the second thing, and I've seen this in a couple of places just in the last day or two, was, this Facebook privacy chain letter has been making the rounds again.
Oh, has it ever.
I'm expecting some friends of my mom and other people like that to post about it soon. This is just another classic. You know, A, it's like, you know, you've signed the terms of service.
Yep.
And B, with stuff like this going around, and I tell people, have a quick Google or go to Snopes or check things out, please.
Yeah. Or use common sense.
Or use common sense.
Because I know a lot of people don't have
it. You know, I've gone to the point, I hate to be the bad guy, but I'm the twit that, yes, does post in someone's feed and say, no, go to Snopes, it's fake. And,
yeah.
You know, they usually get pissed off with me at that point. Well, it's like, hey. You know, I don't want to spread it.
I had a great conversation with a guy who posted it, and it resulted in him deleting the message because I said, ultimately, you've learned the lesson that this is not real, that this doesn't do anything.
But I wish that person would then tell all the people they sent it out to.
Well, and that was my point, was that ultimately it's being more destructive because you're then convincing people just through them reading it that this is something that will actually do something, that it will actually change how stuff is happening, when in reality, it won't.
Yeah. And people should know how copyright actually works and what you're kind of signing away when you sign up for Facebook.
And if they don't, it's a good education for them.
Yeah,
to know.
Exactly.
You know, we've recently had Copyright Act changes in Canada here, for example.
I believe that passed yesterday or today?
Yesterday, today. We actually should have discussed that a bit. Maybe we'll discuss it near the end of the show. You know, a lot of it we've been talking about already, but... Yeah, we'll see what happens here. So, okay, so that's our rant for Facebook this week, as far as I know.
This week?
Well, does anyone else have any more rants? I'm sure something will come up. eventually. I don't have stock in it, so I'm quite happy with that. Okay, so now we have, can a robot make a better hamburger? I know this isn't my story.
Oh, that was my story.
That's your story.
Yeah, this is about a robot, okay. You know, not a humanoid robot or anything, but a machine that is able to make hamburgers. And it can do it way faster than any human could and way better, apparently. So it can do things like you can ask it to make like a, you know, 60% beef, 40% pork burger, and it'll make that for you. And then it'll cook it perfectly so it keeps the juices in and everything. And it does like, what was it, like 300 per hour?
400 per hour, according to the link here.
400 per hour, which is better than most people.
That's true. Slices fresh ingredients only after you placed your order. You know, so yeah, the only thing I don't see here is where's the option for freshly grilled bacon?
Oh, that's got to be on there.
That's better be on there.
It's probably freshly sliced and cooked to perfection.
There we go. It kills the pig right there and then. you put a cow and a pig in, and then you're all set.
Is its name GLaDOS?
Nice. I was saying, like, it's going to replace a lot of workers and perhaps make them into hamburgers.
Oh, there we go. You're reading Soylent Green as people. No, this is this looks kind of interesting. Again, we'll have the link in the show notes. But yeah, you know what? I'm not surprised. You know, you're already seeing some automation in that already. Mm-hmm. You know, you did for a longest time, but then all the rich chains started saying, you know, have it your way, and that's what kind of that's what kind of changed things back again. So no, I can see this. See this.
To play devil's advocate, do we really need this? Because I mean, if you take a look at the way that the food industry is going and things like that, there's a lot of overdevelopment of meat and things like that, and over focus of it in comparison to other forms of food that, you know, traditionally have been more important for the human body.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm all for a perfect burger that's, you know, a quarter beef and a 2/3 bison or something like that. Don't get me wrong.
That's awesome. Let's get some pulled pork in there and all that. This is kind of cool, too. It also bags it at the end. I was just reading that, too.
Yeah.
So, like start to finish, all you got to do is pick it up and go. Again, I don't see a bacon option, so we got to work on that.
That's too bad.
You know, as members of the London, Ontario Bacon Club.
Well, I'm sure if this takes off, then we'll see bacon machines and, you know, salad machines, whatever you want.
I would be fine with a bacon machine. That would be it. So that's pretty impressive. I like that. Okay, onwards and upwards. Okay, RIM boasts carrier billing integration. Our good friends at Research in Motion. Let's talk a little bit about this. 50 carriers. This is in a run up to their BB10 release for January, about 2 months away. So basically carrier billing, and which I really didn't understand completely before I read the story, so that's how much I knew about it. But it basically, it's a feature which allows the user to basically add paid items in their monthly phone bill as opposed to using PayPal or a credit card. So it's a frictionless method of payment. I keep kicking Mike's microphone. I'm sorry.
How dare you?
I know. We're going to get booms eventually. But basically, it's basically the equivalent, I guess, of the App Store when you're with your iPod or Amazon One Click or whatever. So, you know, again, BB10's really, you know, RIM's really trying to step it up, and they want to make sure this experience is as good as possible for the consumer. Comments, Mike?
It makes sense. The whole frictionless aspect where, you know, you have one method of payment and you can do it in one click. I could see a lot of people liking that. I'd be a little paranoid about putting all my eggs in one basket and having just one payment system, one ecosystem where everything goes through one thing. But on the other hand, it's convenient. I mean, with iTunes and everything, I love having everything going through one account. I just put in my password no matter what I'm buying through Apple, and it's all there. So I can, you know, it's generally a good thing, I think.
I do it for more Amazon,
And it's always optional, too. You could not click that button. You could pay with PayPal instead. I'm sure that'll still be there.
Yep,
so
exactly.
It's another more freedom.
And again, by the large number of carriers, it shows how big they're planning to make, you know, the whole BB10 thing. So
go big or go home.
Yep. Jameson, any comments on this?
My main concern with it is going to be the same thing with, say, you know, Rogers and the near field chips and things like that for, you know, you can pay with your phone for stuff. Is that they're going to start dinging you a few cents here and there for transactions, you know, essentially upping your bill for nothing more than the convenience factor. One thing that, you know, if you take a look with Apple and iTunes, yeah, it's all purchased through an account, but as far as we can tell, there isn't a huge convenient factor. Well, there is, but you know, they've openly said we take an X percent of the percentage for facilitating the service.
Now, do you really think playing devil's advocate, do you really think a carrier will be able to get away with that once it becomes known?
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe. Haven't we essentially been doing that forever with credit cards, though?
Anyway. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's different that you're borrowing money versus just convenience, but it's the same thing.
I guess the question is, though, is if you've got a competing service, is if you're getting dinged for using that, then you go back just to using a credit card service. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if Research in Motion has something in the contract. Because, if that happens and people aren't using the product, everyone's going to something else, I'm sure RIM's going to be a little bit pissed off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, it's a very valid point. We'll have to see what happens there. Okay. Dealing with Research in Motion, yet another analyst. He's basically giving some very good, hopefully some good news in the future. It is true. The shares are rebounding big time. Stocks rallied nearly 70% in the past 3 months, following upbeat estimates from a variety of Wall Street analysts. And a lot of this came because they have given a date for the BlackBerry 10 system in January.
And they've been showing it off, too.
They've been showing it off. One of our co-hosts, Carmi Levy, for example, was at one of the Jazz Days and was very impressed with what he saw. It'll be interesting to see. Mike, I don't know if anyone from your organization has been to that, and I know they're all under NDA.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's actually played with it, surprisingly, but... most of the buzz is positive so far, except for the embarrassing gaffes. Like, I don't know if you talked about this before, but when they had the leak, quotes, I'm doing air quotes now, where they had, Thurston Hines.
Yep.
Using his new BlackBerry device at some sporting event. And it was very obvious that they meant to leak it. And it's just kind of the sad stuff that RIM is doing.
But, you know, how much is that different? Because there's still a lot of people out there that think that device, that one of the iPhone 4 that was, quote-unquote, accidentally left in a bar, there's still people saying that was just a big PR stunt.
True, but so, that's a little more subtle. But.
I know, I suppose. But, yeah, and again, I've only played with a BlackBerry very briefly. I'm quite happy with my iPhone. But, you know, as we said here before, competition's good. I hope they come up with a compelling product. It'll be nice to have a Canadian company, A, back in the game, and it'll be nice to have some other features and some competition. So,
And I think one thing that could give them a chance, you mentioned your iPhone, is that, Apple is seeming a lot less cool lately.
Yeah.
They're kind of taking a nosedive, like both in terms of stocks and just in terms of the public opinion.
Whoops. And they're becoming a little bit of the old standby.
Exactly. Like, they're becoming like RIM was
Microsoft,
at one point.
Yep.
Or Microsoft. Yeah. So if RIM can kind of become the cool up and comer, the scrappy little, up and comer.
Yep.
Then maybe they can take some market share.
Or at least prevent, possibly prevent my Microsoft from gaining much. Because I think the company that stands most to gain with a RIM failure, I still say, is Microsoft.
Yeah.
With Windows Phone 8 for that corporate side. This analyst also estimates they could ship 41.4 million devices in the February 2014 fiscal year. That's an increase from what they estimated was 30.2 million. And so he's hoping to see, profits in that ahead. And, he says here, BB10 helping RIM win back material share from Android and iOS remains an open question. Regardless of our market share upside, is now our view that RIM is now in a good position to successfully stabilize its base, which will help repair its brand reputation and push shipments higher on a year-over-year basis off a low base. Well, we told everyone that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we're not a high-priced analyst. Look at the money they could have saved.
Hey.
I
could have paid us.
Exactly. That would have been nice. Compared with these analysts, Mike, I'll take a tenth of what that.
I know.
We're still looking good.
I still think the concern for RIM, though, has got to be their app store. That's got to be getting developers online with BB10 and getting people actually developing apps. Because if you take a look at the way the trends are working these days, Google's finally, it's been slowly growing. Microsoft, obviously, with Windows 8 and all the interoperability between the different devices and apps that can run on all the different machines fairly seamlessly. And obviously iOS being the big contender for the App Store. If RIM doesn't have an App Store filled with apps on the first day, you're going to see people turning away.
Definitely.
Well, yeah. You know what? This is probably a good time to talk about that because, you know, you're also hearing some similar comments being echoed from ever since the Surface RT launch about apps available in the Microsoft Store.
And so, even Windows Phone, too.
Yep. So this is probably a good thing to kind of get in a little bit on the whole App Store infrastructure. We've seen, you know, the iPhone's five years old. The App Store as it is, the concept is only 5 years old, and we're seeing all the major players really getting into it in a big way. You know, instead of you having to download software from every individual place, you can go to one single place now and download it. You know, let's talk about this. Do you think the App Store is something that's going to be here to stay for at least a while? Can you see any more, with the whole concept somehow maturing in different ways? Let's get some commentary on that.
I think it's here to stay. I think it has to be. I think people have sort of seen the light of convenience, both with, you know, the applications they're using on a day-to-day basis, you know, things like Steam for games, et cetera. People don't want to have to go, oh, I just found out about this new game by randomly trolling the internet. They like the convenience factor of it, and I don't think people are going to want to shift away from that. Now, something better could come along. I have no idea what that might look like. But I think it's going to stay. It's going to mature. It's going to mature into more of a market. I would like to see more of a market that's a little bit more open on the borders between, you know, shifting from the iTunes store to the Google store to potentially the RIM. You know, depending on what's available, how it's available, and things like that. It would be nice to see that. It would also be nice to see developers being a little bit easier for them to sort of release something on each platform equally and as easily.
But do you think for the reasons in terms of we talk about developers, one of the reasons people like the App Store platform is because not everyone can just, in theory, just submit a piece of crap or some spam-ridden thing. So there is some time takes to approve that.
No, I do. I think that definitely has to stay because I would like to think it's helping cut down on a lot of malware being as easily accessible.
Right.
I mean, I know that you can put a PC online and within 30 minutes it'd be completely virus-ridden by not even going to a website. But at least if you've got some filtering going on there, it helps cut down on it.
Yeah. One thing I saw today that's kind of related to this, I believe the website was famo.us. It's famous with .us at the end.
Okay.
And it was a proof of concept for HTML5 web apps.
Yep.
And it worked, you know, pretty flawlessly on any device that you accessed it on. So that would be kind of the ideal alternative for a lot of people to an app store is just having the web, except, you know, a website you go to is a full-featured app that's indistinguishable from a native app.
Yes.
And we're starting to see a little bit of that. I know Chrome's got some stuff coming out of the laboratory, and there's some pretty amazing things you can do now with HTML5. Mm-hmm. The question is, do you think people are going to, you know, in some cases that requires a persistent web connection, do you think people are necessarily going to go with that, particularly in the mobile space?
It doesn't require it. Yeah, there are ways to get around that. But even there's still a lot of other limitations as well. Like, you know, you can't have push notifications. You've always got – you're accessing through the browser, so it's always limited to what the browser can do. But kind of that device agnosticity where it doesn't matter what device you have, you're not locked into an ecosystem anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's an alternative. I don't know if it'll ever overtake app stores as a concept, but, you know, it's promising.
Right.
It might be a decent alternative depending on what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, I can certainly think of some applications where that would work just as well as an app, depending on what type of content you're either dishing up or things like that. And especially with the HTML5 local storage stuff that's slowly starting to get supported by browsers, it becomes a little bit more of a possibility. Mm-hmm.
Jamie brings up a good point in the chat room, you know, and I was going to ask basically a similar question. At least pick up which app store we want to use instead of being locked into the hardware vendor's app store. And I think, you know, this is one thing Apple, rightly so, is gotten a lot of criticism about this, that, you know, some of their stuff's very, very draconian, some people say. You know, yeah, it would be interesting to see. Wouldn't it be nice, like, we're starting to see, for example, Steam's available now.
Yeah.
You know, on the iOS device and stuff like that. So you're starting to see that. But, yeah, I I could see in some ways having a different app store, or at least, you know, do you think Apple's going to have to move a little bit with the times and become a little bit less draconian, like let's say the Android? Or again, I haven't looked at the Microsoft app store to see what that's like, but do you think we're going to see a more openness?
I think they'll have to in the long run, because mm-hmm. people are going to get sick of this whole walled garden thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, right now it's just kind of geeks talking about it because no one really thinks about it too much. But as soon as people start, you know, we have mobile, you know, everyone's taking cell phones for, everyone has a cell phone these days. So a lot of the average people are going to start switching to Android or whatever's cool at the moment. Then they'll realize, oh, I've lost all my apps now. You know, if I use Steam, yep. then I'd still have them yep. on whatever platform. Yep. But because I use Apple's App Store, I'm locked into Apple now.
But you know what? I agree with you there, because that's one thing that makes me think about before I get like either an iPad mini or a 7-inch thing, but from a tablet. But I think the problem is as well is that it's also the same. It's very similar to the same thing we have is if you have someone move from Windows to Macintosh, for example, to Linux. So, you know, there's that too. But yeah, I agree, because we've become so much more of a consumer level devices, mm-hmm. people don't think about it as much. And, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people, when they move from PC to Apple, there's other apps available, and they consider, you know, yes, I have to buy a Mac version of a word processor. I have to buy a Mac version of this. You know, when I buy the computer, it's the cost of changing to the new device.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wonder how much people will think of just that in that regard, you know, because it's mm-hmm. something I've thought about, because, you know, the Galaxy, what is it? The Galaxy, I always get the name wrong, the 7-inch one, the Android. The
Nexus?
One that Jamie has, the Nexus, yes. You know, it's a beautiful tablet. I mm-hmm. looked at it, you know, a lot, and I think it's, you know, very nice. But then I also think, okay, for the $60 price difference, all the apps I have on my iPad now, I'd want mm-hmm. to run on this, you know, and that's yeah. where, as you say, that's where being locked in, but that's where you have to
that's
kind
where
of
Apple
decide.
Profits from it, though.
Well, exactly.
Being
exactly.
hurt by it.
Yeah, exactly. So, and as you say, if the app vendors, as long as, you know, we start to see, you know, more apps on different app stores. But again, there's also the profitability. Companies can only do so many. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me of like 30 years ago when you had, you know, the Commodore 64, Atari, you had, you know, the TRS-80. Everyone had a different operating system and a different computer. You had some games, you know, just like today you see it on three different gaming consoles. You had it on four or five different PC
yeah.
platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, I think we're, you know, I think what goes around comes around, and we're kind of seeing a return to that.
I do think that from the App Store point of view, you're going to still see a division. The way I see it in my mind is there's more of a potential for a mobile openness where switching from platform to platform might be a little bit more open. But I think when you're looking at stuff like the App Store for Apple and the App Store for Microsoft for Windows 8, those are going to be hard-walled. The only thing you're going to see cross-platform is something sort of special like Steam with games, where there's, you know, if you get it for one, you're getting it for the other, or potentially for all three if you include Linux.
And that's one thing we've seen Steam offering. They've got their Steam Play, and, you know, yeah, you buy one for one, you get it for all the different platforms. You know, I think it'd be kind of not that I would love to see it, but not that we ever would. But wouldn't it be neat to have like an Android emulator on your iPad?
Yep.
Yes.
You know, something like that. Now, again, I'm sure someone's working on it, but you'd probably have to jailbreak your device.
Yeah, Apple would never allow that.
No, it's kind of a shame. But again, we could see that down the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like we see, you know, VirtualBox, Parallel, stuff like that being run on, you know, Macs allows you to run your PC program. So
as tablets get more powerful, though, you might see we're already seeing the lines between tablets and laptops blur. So I don't see it as being unforeseeable to see a Parallels running on an iPad in the next 5 years.
Exactly. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised too. Again, probably at first it'll have to be jailbroken.
Mm-hmm.
But down the road, you know, and we've seen that before. Like, look at what happened with Camera Plus. You know, they banned it from the store because it was using the volume controls as a shutter.
and then they go ahead and do it themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, interesting times ahead. Okay, moving on. Speaking of Apple, Samsung, you know, we're still having, you know, in some sides they kiss and make up. In other sides they're still fighting. And in other sides, Apple drops Samsung as a MacBook iPad battery supplier, according to this report.
Are we really surprised?
I'm not.
Is that sarcasm?
No, I think a little bit.
Sarcasm.
You know, but again, yeah, it's you know, and this isn't the first time they've done this to Samsung. They've already been doing it for displays for some of their flash memory. So yeah,
although they still use Samsung solid states.
Well, there we go. You know, and you know, if these days with everyone going to tablets and phones and stuff like that, it's a great time to be a battery supplier. Maybe we should check some stocks on those. So yeah, and again, I can certainly see a lot of companies wanting to get into bed with Apple. Mm-hmm. Very lucrative market when you look at the number of
solid supply chain.
Yep, exactly. Now, what's also interesting though is apparently Samsung raised the price of their A series processors by as much as 20%. Recently. So, you know, but then again, people are saying, no, that's not the case. So there's a lot of stuff going on there. You know, Samsung, they are not a one trick pony. So no. they do various other things. So it'll be interesting to see, but you know, you look at $1 billion in damages, Samsung has to pay, a lot of stuff going on here. Now, one thing I did read recently, I believe it was year to date or past quarter, the Samsung Galaxy S3s, they sold more of those than Apple's 4S's. Hmm. So, you know, again, it shows, you know, they're still up there just because a lot of us are Apple fanboys and that. There's a hell of a lot of Android devices out there. And you know what? It's funny. I see a lot more of them. It's kind of funny. You start thinking about it and you go, yeah, there's a lot of people. Here it is. I just found the article again. It was for the third quarter. They sold 18 million Galaxy S3s compared to 16.2 million for the 4S.
Oh, wow. It's pretty comparable though.
Yeah, but you know, before it wasn't like basically the Galaxy 3S has a 10.7% market share and the iPhone now has a 9.7%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's significant because it's one device.
It's one device.
It's not just Android outselling iOS, which has always been the case.
Yep. The iPhone 5, for example, the same quarter, Apple sold 6 million of them and that was worth 3.7% of the market. So, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, it's pretty amazing. And again, I've heard very, very good reviews on the 3S. There's been a lot of, you know, people love using it. Apparently, it's very enterprise friendly. Mm. It's great. Again, I haven't had a chance to play with it, but some people I know that have are saying very, very good things about it. So, mm-hmm. you know, it'll be interesting to see. As I always say, when it comes time for my contract up on my iPhone, I look. I do, seriously.
It certainly doesn't hurt to look around and take a look at the market and see what's going on.
Yep.
You know, there's nothing wrong, and I don't think there should be anyone ever afraid of switching providers. It's just be aware of the cost, ultimately, because, you know, you're looking at getting the phone itself. And I heard a great it was Carmi's talk at TES about this, was that, you know, when you're buying a phone, you're buying a window of usage on a tool. Mm-hmm. You're not buying, I mean, it's all fine and dandy to be buying it as a status symbol. Just know that in a year's time, you're probably going to be forking over a huge amount of cash to update your status symbol. But for most people, you're buying a window of opportunity.
Right.
But you're also, as we were saying earlier, you're buying a window of opportunity on that app store or on that app platform. So you're going to be, it's not only the monthly cost of the phone, the cost of the phone itself, it's also whatever you're going to be spending on applications to go along with it.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that we were talking about before, like when I have my iPad and I was looking for another tablet, I don't think that issue of staying inside that walled garden, at least for me, isn't as large when I'm switching to a phone, because I'm, you know, I play the odd game on my phone, but not nearly as many as I do on the iPad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the things I use my phone for are social media, Twitter, mm-hmm. making calls, email clients, you know, generally
dime a dozen.
Yeah, at least for the phone. It's a different story for the iPad. You know, yeah, Foursquare, Twitter, you know, these are all apps that are going to have, you know, they're going to be native apps out there for that particular device. So this is where I say, if something really compelling came along, yeah, I'd probably switch from my iPhone. Mm-hmm. The last time we switched was when the 4S, and there wasn't really anything for my wife and I that we found compelling. So that's why we switched.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we switched to the S and stayed with the iOS in infrastructure. So, yeah, I think it's something people have to realize, and they got to be, the companies too have to be aware of that.
Yeah.
You know, particularly on the phone side, because depending what you use it for, it's not nearly the same.
They're not buying people aren't buying it because they're loyal. They're buying it because either a lot of people are buying it because it's the cool factor, or it's because, oh, well, I had the previous one, so I'll just buy the next one because, hey, it's already got it. It's easy for me to, you know, switch all my stuff forward, et cetera. So,
well, speaking of iPhone 5, Mike, you've had one for a little while now.
I have, yeah.
What are your reactions, review of it after like a couple of months?
It's solid. I mean, it's a longer iPhone. That's the main thing, but... You know,
there's about 10 jokes there, but we're going to be good.
Yes. But, you know, it looks nice. I still don't have a case on it, so I still take it in my pocket and kind of gaze at it lovingly. but, you know, functionally, it does all the same stuff, just with an extra line of text.
I actually saw a tweet today from a local broadcaster in town. Apparently, he cracked the glass on the back of his iPhone case, and he tweeted out, "Here's something I didn't know. You can take it to the Apple store, and they'll fix it for like $30 or something." $30 or $100, something like, you know, they'll fix it right there.
Bad.
Yeah, that's not bad at all for the back of it because, yeah, people don't realize. I still have mine. It's in my little slightly better case because I just find it's a little bit too thin and all dropped.
Yeah, I've gotten used to it.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, John Pylon actually did drop his.
Oh.
And he's got the black with the black edging just like yours, and it left just the little tiniest of nick on the black edging.
That gives it personality.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so he's been very happy with it as well. So, good stuff. Okay, moving on. Here's a good example of kind of social media becoming more and more mainstream. I just noted this today in the paper. Niagara Regional Police using YouTube to get the public's help to find a shooting suspect. So this is, again, an example of the mainstream organizations, police departments and stuff like that. They're starting to use social media more and more, you know, to get the word out. Mm-hmm. In this case, this is about a shooting that occurred. And they've actually produced a little video similar to like what you see in the Crime Stoppers thing. But instead of just restricting it to TV, it's on YouTube for the world to see. Comments, do you think we're going to see more and more of this? Do you think it makes a lot of sense?
I'm surprised it took this long.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, YouTube's been pretty huge for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's good that they're finally getting on board.
I think... I'm with Mike on this. I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner because if you take a look at, you know, on the 401 and things like that on the big corridor, they've had the amber alerts on the big signs for how many years now?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's kind of the logical thing. So why not throw up a, you know, every once in a while have it? I know they don't want people to use their phones, but you're probably going to have a passenger throw up a Twitter address on there, say, follow this for the most recent, you know, for up-to-date traffic updates, or, you know, follow this one for... It's just news that's going on. Is why not?
I guess the only thing I'm just thinking about here is, unlike when they have like the Crime Stoppers tip and like that during the news or whatever, which is more like a push thing, how are people going to find this?
I think more and more we're going to see kind of contextual technology.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it'll be an app or whatever, but, you know, in the longer term, I think stuff will get pushed to you based on the context. So it'll know of your location. It'll know which store you're in. It'll know, you know, if you're in the area of where some kid went missing, you'll get a push notification saying, hey, have you seen this person?
No, but like now that's going to be something, let's say, for example, YouTube. YouTube's going to have to participate in.
Yeah.
In providing that. But that also means, again, the people making the videos are going to have to become a little bit more versed, just like people who are in SEO and stuff like that. We're going to have to look at that. Because I agree, yeah, that would be a very smooth way to do it. One thing I always find amazing is when there's an Amber Alert issued, how quick the word gets around, particularly on Twitter.
Yeah, like, and that's a crude way of doing it. Yeah. I mean, with a hashtag, a local hashtag,
but
and
people
104
retweet
characters
it.
At a time.
People
but
retweet
it works.
It's amazing, yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing how quick that does indeed happen. But,
well,
you know,
and the number of times that I hear about stories going on in London from people who listen to, I don't even know where half of this stuff comes from, but I'll hear a tweet or I'll see a tweet soon. You know, long before I hear it from, you know, CJBK, any of the AM stations, any of, you know, the London Free Press or things like that, every once in a while they'll have a story sort of at the top on Twitter for news. But quite frankly, I hear more through Twitter news-wise than I do any other place.
I think it's a hyper-local news aggregator. Yeah, Twitter is definitely what's happening. And you see the mainstream media noticing that. Mm-hmm. For example, 2 weeks ago when on Sunday night the rumor came out about, you know, from an ex-employee that Novavax was going to close. You know, that very quickly, you know, I retweeted, a few other people did. That very quickly, you know, got the notice of the London Free Press, and Kate Dubinsky wrote a story on that. Mm. And that was before the store opened Sunday night. So, yeah, they're using it as another way. And all the stations monitor that now. They're, you know, especially in London, because we've got such a vibrant and active Twitter community. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very easily, word can be spread that way.
Yep.
So yeah, I think it's, you know, it's a growing thing, particularly with Twitter, because it's inherent broadcast nature. Mm-hmm. In many ways. I think, yeah, you're going to see much more of that. Okay, moving on. A couple of fun stories here. This is kind of a neat one for those of you of a certain age. Today's Google Canada Doodle. So this would be for Monday. If you go to google.ca, the doodle on top is actually in tribute to Mr. Dress Up, or you know, Ernie Coombs, who was the original Mr. Dress Up. He would have been 87, I believe, today. So he's actually being remembered here. You know, this was, you know, amazing show when you were a kid, this whole generations that did it. Do either of you remember Mr. Dress Up?
Oh yeah.
I don't remember.
You were too young?
A little bit.
All right.
But I do remember it.
Okay.
I don't remember him though.
Okay. Well, it was launched in 1967. And yeah, he had arts and crafts and all that. Now it actually started, he actually did an understudy with Fred Rogers.
From really?
Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Yes, exactly. Huh. So, no, he, Ernie Coombs, retired in 1996, and he suffered a stroke, a couple of years later. He died in 2001. So yeah, see, this is something Google does. They do all sorts of different ones, but yeah, it's, you know, if you're a certain age, you remember growing up with this show. I certainly do, Casey and Vinegan and all that. So it's kind of nice to see this being recognized. So for all you do that, and anyone who's in Toronto, if you go to the CBC building, they have the original treehouse, and I believe they have the tickle trunk in the CBC. They have like a little mini museum.
Yeah.
They have that, and they also have some of the props from the Friendly Giant.
Oh, nice!
Really?
Yeah, that's kind of cool. You go and you go, wow, it seems small. it's kind of funny that way, but yeah, they have the window where he would stand and all that. So that's kind of cool, and there's quite a few of these available on YouTube. And in the CBC archives, you know, yeah, great, great, great guy. Nice to be commemorated about. Okay, our next story. This is again another fun one. These are as all of you know, there's been this Carly Rae Jepsen song, "Call Me Maybe." Everyone and their uncle's been parroting it.
And there's so many memes out there.
Many memes from the U.S. Olympic team to you know. Miami Dolphin cheerleaders to troops in Afghanistan and stuff like that. Well, the Waverly Mansion, which is a local London, Ontario retirement home, they actually did their own take on it, and it's hilarious. It's actually really good fun. And some people who have relatives there have said it's really helped pick up the residents' spirits.
Oh, nice.
and stuff like that. Because there was some criticism on 1 a.m. the radio show that people felt, oh, they're being taken advantage of. And to that, I say bah humbug to them. but no, it's a kind of a fun thing. And apparently, they had a lot of fun making it, and it's really kind of brought a lot of them out of their shells and stuff.
Music,
like
entertainment,
that.
And community. I mean, how can you go wrong with
exactly.
that?
Exactly. So, yeah, no, the Free Press was down there. CTV had a film crew, so they've been really enjoying the attention.
Yeah,
you know,
they're famous now. They're it was famous. On Mashable. I just looked at the YouTube video. It had over 300,000 views.
Oh, wow.
So this is a big deal for little
there
old London.
Go. There you go, little London. And, you know, all the folks there, they could be famous. Who knows? They'll be appearing next at the Super Bowl show.
Oh, apparently. Apparently they're going to do a Gangnam Style that would parody be cool. as well.
I was going to say with the number of Gangnam Style parodies out there,
they could probably kick ass compared to some of the Gundam Style parodies I've seen out there actually. So yeah, but no, you know what? It's kind of fun. Don't be surprised if you see a few more flash mob now that Christmas is here. There's always some good flash mob videos that come out. I always remember one from I believe it was a Macy's store in Philadelphia. They had a bunch of choirs in Philadelphia. I don't know, you being a chorister, I don't know if you heard about this.
I remember hearing something about it.
Handel's Messiah, they did. Yeah. It was a nonprofit called Random Acts of Art or something like that.
Yeah.
And so what they did was they had on a very busy Christmas weekend at a Macy's store in Philadelphia, which has this very unique, because this store has this beautiful organ and they play Christmas music. Mm-hmm. So they had about 400 choir members from different choirs were kind of were all in the store anyway. And then all of a sudden they broke out into Handel's Messiah, the Hallelujah chorus. And it was hilarious to watch. So, you know, it's really it's really good fun. Yes, someone has their phone really close, not in airplane mode.
It's not me.
I don't think it's mine. I don't know. Maybe we're having random signals. It's our mystery phone. So no, but it was kind of cool too.
I know about 4 or 5 years ago there was one that happened in I think it was Niagara Falls.
Welland.
Yes. Welland, yes. And I know a few people that were in that one that got a little bit of fame around the Faculty of Music even. So
yeah, no, that's always fun to see. And as we say, any way we can use technology. So okay, any good Cyber Monday? Black Friday, all that stuff. Let's turn over to you, our shopping advisor.
What?
You put the story in.
No, I didn't.
No, that was me.
Okay, let's go to Mike, our shopping advisor.
No, I don't have any stories.
All right.
I was actually lucky because this past Friday, my credit card stopped working.
Oh.
Because I spent too much on it. So
you got to stay off those 1976 numbers.
Bro. I know. It's an addiction.
All right.
But so I was not able to take advantage of any of the deals, which is probably a good thing.
Probably
since
was.
My credit card was already over.
Yeah. Yes. A friend of mine was keeping an eye on Tiger Direct. I think it was on Saturday, and he noticed that there was a phenomenal solid-state drive on for, I think it was like $45.
Yep.
And he didn't pick it up that day because he figured, oh, well, I'll pick it up tomorrow.
Silly boy.
And it was gone. And it was like a 180. It was, you know.
It was a good, yeah, I think it was a 120, actually.
Or 120. But it was still, a 120, for, yeah. For like $40 or $50?
That's solid.
I saw that one. Nice pun there.
Thank you.
I saw that one. They also had a 256 one, which is more what I would be looking for to replace the drive in the MacBook.
Yeah.
And I decided, no, it wasn't quite enough, and I got to try and be good. The credit card's pretty high right now. It's been an expensive month. So, but yeah, you know, but you know what's funny? I've also read some other articles where they say that time of year is the absolute worst time to buy a TV, for example.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I've heard that too.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, it pays. Don't get sucked in. You know, mm-hmm. It really pays for
there that. There's some things that the deals are worth it. There are a lot of things that I take a look at it and I go, you know what? I see that deal, you know, on a semi-monthly basis,
yep.
And it's almost as good, if not better. And I don't have to fight the crowd.
And if it's something you don't need, then yeah, exactly. And that's the way I do it. See, that's the thing I'm really trying to control, because you know what else was on? Also, in addition to Black Friday, it was the Steam Autumn Sale.
Yes. Mm.
And that's always dangerous for me. And so far, I've been very good. I've been managing because I buy this stuff.
I haven't even opened up
that's
Steam.
Good.
I didn't. That's I knew
wise.
It was on, and I'm
that's
like,
wise.
I'm not going there.
Because they always have good deals, and there's stuff I've bought I still haven't played from the summer
yeah,
sale.
Yeah, I do that all the time. I find games on sale, and then I never play them.
I know.
I stay
all
in the shrink wrap or unopened.
All the indie bundles on Steam?
Oh, there's some good ones there. No, there's a few other things, too, and you find you don't have time.
Yep.
That's my big thing, or something new comes out like Guild Wars 2, and you know, that's what's been keeping a lot of my attention as well. So, you know, but again, yep, as always, there are some good deals. You see a lot more of it in Canada now. You're seeing a lot more of the Black Friday advertising and stuff like that. So they're, you know, the manufacturers are definitely getting on board. You know, more and more we're seeing online shopping instead of fighting the crowd, sit at home. And I've got friends of mine last year. I think she did all her shopping. If it wasn't local, she was buying online. She didn't go to the mall. You know, even every so often Amazon had a book recently where for whatever reason they were pricing it in the States for $3 as opposed to like 12. So even with shipping, it was cheaper to bring it up here. So, you know, but yeah, no, definitely for those of you, you know, who
the big sales do bring the customers out. I know that Masonville was packed past weekend.
Yeah.
So,
but you know what? I also like to say though, you know, we talked about Novax before. Also, give local a chance.
Yep.
There's some very good deals there to be had. I'm a great believer in customer service, for example. I was in Novax, actually. You know, it turns out there's two things I wanted to get for the end of the year anyway. So I got them both when they're on sale, and they still had stock. So that was awesome.
Nice.
I was really, really pleased about that. Okay, next thing here. What's this? Pinterest for chins.
Oh, I put that there.
Chinterest. Why am I not surprised?
Chinterest. Yeah, it's like Pinterest.
Is this safe for work?
It's mostly safe for work,
okay.
Yeah. It's just like Pinterest, except it's just for chins. So instead of posting whatever you want, all you can post is pictures of chins. So there's a lot of Jay Leno on there.
It starts with Leno. I see that. Yeah.
A lot of beards on there. Some people with bandaged chins. Some people with no chins.
Oh dear. I can just
you look for this on a routine?
I was going to ask the same question. Yeah, How do you find this stuff?
I've been waiting for something like this my whole life, probably. And finally, I checked today for Chinterest. There it is.
Oh.
I really wonder about what else you're looking for, because I can see some really bad, not safe for work variations here.
Probably, yeah.
Probably. We're not going to go there.
Pinterest.
Again, we're a family show.
Since when?
We go. Yeah, well, when anytime Mike's here, we have to do that.
Oh, okay.
My very large and vast legal team reminds me of that. So, and half of Mike's friends too. So, anytime I say, they say, okay, make sure he doesn't do too much.
Oh.
hey, if you want to do more, you can have your own Not Safe for Work show.
Maybe I will then.
There you go. The studio's always available. God help us. Okay.
I'll call it NSFW. Exactly. That's not taken, is it?
No, I don't think it's taken. No. NSFW.ca, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
The Canadian NSFW.
All right. Picks of the week. I'm going to start this time. Evernote version 5. It came out for iOS and Mac. Evernote, I've talked about it before. Those of us who use it reach a religious fever about it. We love talking about it.
Yeah, I've noticed.
Yes, but it's beautiful. Beautiful software. It works very, very well. The Mac versions, basically, you've got a much cleaner display. I really love on the iPhone now. Everything's kind of separated by little tabs. I'm still getting used to the Mac version a little bit, just for some of the searches and that. There's a little bit of a learning curve there, but overall, what it's doing now, I'm really impressed.
We did figure out some stuff on the weekend that you were
saying. We did, yes. Yeah. When you and I were meeting on the weekend, I was swearing a little bit, and we figured it out together. But no, it's still a very good upgrade, particularly on the iPhone. I'm really enjoying it on the iPhone. It'll be interesting. They haven't released a day yet for the Windows release of that, but I know they will eventually. They're very good for cross-platform. Jameson.
Well, and speaking of our little conflab on the weekend, you may or may not have converted me to TweetDeck. I'm still in the process of getting all my stuff.
Welcome to the dark side. We have cookies.
Hey, free cookies. Sweet. No, TweetDeck, it's definitely a phenomenal little program. I'm vastly becoming a person that quite enjoys it. Just the fact of how easy it is to sort of switch between accounts, and I'll have to be careful around that. But
as people know, when they occasionally see me post out of this week in London tweets post out of the Un-London account, yes,
yeah. The main thing I like that I'm still playing around with this, but is the fact that I can post to the different pages on Facebook as well as my own personal one. So it'll be nice for managing some social media stuff a lot easier than having to log into Facebook and blah, 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 blah. So that's my pick of the week.
That's your pick of the week. And it's actually free.
Mm-hmm. Which is even better.
And there's also a browser plugin, so you don't even have to install the app if you don't want to. Like, there's a desktop app.
Well, when I eventually switch to Chrome, if that ever happens, then
yes,
I'll use
yes. Yes, yes. We'll slowly convince you of that, too.
Oh.
Mike?
My pick is something called Curiosity. It's for the iPhone, iPad, and probably Android too, but who cares?
Well, if you ask Jamie, he might. On the chat room.
That was for him. But it's an app by 22 Cans, which is Peter Molyneux. I think that's how you say his name. He's the guy who made Populous and Black and White and all these games.
Oh, okay, yeah.
A lot of really creative games.
Yes.
And what this game is you see a giant cube floating in space, and you want to see what's inside the cube, because Peter Molyneux has surprised it, or has promised that it'd be something life-changing. So what you do is you click, click, click on the cube, and it removes one little tiny pixel from the cube at a time. And that's all there is to it. And it's a massively multiplayer cube-clicking game, because everyone is working on the same cube, which has millions of little pixels in it.
Okay.
So what you see is, like, you're removing one layer at a time. So when there's a new layer revealed, it'll show like a picture of something. So you're kind of getting little hints at what might be inside. And you kind of see what I'm fascinated by with this, because I'm a psychologist, is you see patterns in how people are clearing away these layers. So, they always start in the middle, and people start writing stuff in the cube. Half the time it's penises. like they're just or the F word or whatever.
Of course they go there.
Because it's graffiti. That's what people do.
Right.
But you know, a lot of the time people are promoting their websites by drawing in the cube and everything. But it's just this fascinating experiment like nothing anyone's ever seen before, and it's weirdly addictive.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia link, which you had on here, and yeah, it's quite interesting. And then they've even got a whole mathematical formula here, which is making my brain hurt. But yeah, no, as you say, the social experiment, and, you know, based on, the designer, he's done some amazing things before.
Yeah, and he's made some amazing promises that he hasn't kept. So this is this is just an experiment to see how gullible
Clearly, everyone is.
Clearly, he's a psychologist as well.
I think he is, at least intuitively.
Exactly.
So just likes messing with people.
Exactly. Now you actually had a second pick because you couldn't decide on one.
Yeah, like that app is called Curiosity. But I'd like to point out that Carly Rae Jepsen has a song called Curiosity, and it's wonderful.
It's
one of the best songs you'll hear.
It's an earworm in your head right now. I hear.
Yeah. You know, like Call Me Maybe, she's known for, but her whole album is just brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of retro, but still modern. It's wonderful. Everyone should listen to it.
So in other words, if she comes to the, I'm still going to call it the JLC. Mm-hmm. But if she comes to the gardens, you're going to be first in line. Squealing,
oh yeah, definitely.
Squealing like a schoolgirl.
Definitely.
Awesome. So we'll have to arrange that.
And we will.
Even a fake email.
Are you guys going to come with me?
To see you screaming like a little schoolgirl?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah, for that, probably. Yeah, definitely. Excellent. Definitely. Actually, yeah, there's been a bunch of different parodies. The cast of Big Bang Theory did one as well recently, which was kind of fun. Surprised the director and the producer. They managed to sneak
And the that. Audience.
And the audience, yeah, managed to sneak that in behind the scenes. Uh-huh. So that was a lot of fun as well. So, alrighty, anything else? Anything else coming up that we know of? That we can think of coming up this week in tech? Not much, eh?
Not off the top of my head.
What if I'm going to get sued for using those words now?
Whoops.
This probably
week in tech.
Not.
Oh, there we go again. I do know our co-host Carmi has had his first week at Microsoft.
Yep.
He's been enjoying himself, apparently. And despite the rumors, Steve Ballmer did not show up there to give him a tour.
Darn.
I know. I'm sure he was looking forward to it as long as Steve wasn't flinging chairs.
Well, yeah.
You know, I'm sure that would have been fine. So, all righty. Well, I guess that's going to be it for this week. Tune in next week. And again, as a reminder, please rate our podcast on iTunes and tell your friends. We want to get this going far and wide. So for episode 15 of the Canadian Tech Podcast for Monday, November 26, my name is Stuart Clark.
I'm Jameson Roberts.
I'm Dr. Mike Batista.
Thank you and be well. Thank you.